support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years with 7 cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. Welcome back to KTOO's Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you, and our next guest is here to preview tonight's Fireside Friday Fireside Lecture, and it's titled Bears of the World, Teresa Whipple. Teresa, how are you doing?
Good afternoon. I'm doing great. It's sunny outside.
Yes, right? Mm-hmm. And it's actually kind of feels like maybe it's thinking about getting warm.
Yeah, it's supposed to warm up this weekend.
Yeah,
this morning was beautiful. Moon and sun coming up together.
Moon and sun. Well, you're. Let's talk about this. Let's not talk about that anymore. Let's talk about this lecture you're going to do.
Yeah.
Bears of the world. The bears. Every single bear in the world.
Every single. Yeah, we're going to talk about the millions and millions of individual bears.
I love it.
One can.
Why
come
not?
Across.
We got time. Everything else is canceled.
That's right. You don't have any other
else
option
is,
except
got,
come tonight
it's
because
seven,
it's your only option.
7 courses. Friday, Monday, Tuesday, fireside lectures. So bears of the world, tell me first of all your background. What's your kind of expertise on knowing about all these different bears?
Ooh, okay. So I am a commercial bear viewing guide, and I have been doing that for 12 years.
With what outfits?
Ooh.
Gastineau guiding or something like
so
that?
So from Juneau, I work with Pat Creek Bear Tours.
Okay.
And then I also work with a company out of Katmai. And then I have polar bear season on the shorelines of Hudson Bay, which is a different company. I also run my own bear safety company, and that comes into play a little bit. So I'm kind of all over the board.
Cool.
But I live here in Juneau, and my company is based here in Juneau. But I got.
Let's talk about this Hudson Bay one, though. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
You go up and check out polar bears.
Yeah.
Now, polar bears, to me, if you see a polar bear, he's hunting you. Like he is hunting you. If he's allowed you to see him. He has got you in his sights.
So they definitely have a more carnivorous and hunting tendency. They're a bit more predatory. But the area that is set up for viewing this particular subpopulation of polar bears is a place where the bears are congregating there annually, and they're essentially just waiting at the shoreline of the bay. And the bay is so big, when you're standing on the beach, it looks like you're looking out at the Pacific Ocean,
sure,
practically.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're just hanging out along the shorelines, and they're waiting. And they're waiting for the bay to freeze, and it allows them a platform to go out onto the ice and start hunting.
Now, what are they doing when they're waiting? Are they hunting some,
or
are they just...
No, they're fasting, and they're saving their energy. So a lot of the time when we see them, they are napping or walking or doing... just bear things.
Are they doing kind of low energy things?
They're kind of doing low energy things, yeah. Unless it gets particularly cold. If it gets really, really cold, then they can get a little bit more active. But they're so good at conserving their body heat that they can overheat very quickly. So they try to stay inactive to spend very little energy.
Not really. They're not interested in conflicts with other bears and stuff like that at this time. It's kind of it's a peaceful.
It's a somewhat
kind of a zen time for these bears.
Zen a little bit. You know, they all have their own bubble that they like to keep, and they'll sort of, if you imagine kind of a billiard table and the balls being bears, they kind of bounce around off each other a little bit because, you know, one guy is more dominant than the other and he's got to make space for himself. And so there's a little bit of, I wouldn't call it socialization, but there's some social play.
They're all in the same sort of zone. They kind of know, okay, this is our downtime.
Yeah.
Let's not mess with each other.
Yeah, let's not mess with each other too much.
Yeah. Is that a time of year when there's cubs? Mm-hmm. Kind of noticeably cubs?
Yeah, we'll see cubs later in the season. The mums will sort of hang further inland until some of the big guys have cleared out a little bit. So yeah, we can see cubs. They are, gosh, they're cute. I mean, they're so disarmingly cute.
Is there predation on the cubs by other bears
been seen.
Yeah, I mean, that happens in grizzly populations, I know, as well.
It happens within bear family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bears in general. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so this talk, now you call it Bears of the World. Mm-hmm. Are you talking about all species of bears in the world or trying to hit on a lot of them?
We are... Yes, yes, and
okay,
yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Cool.
So it is set up. I wouldn't call it trivia, but there's definitely some audience participation.
Sure, that's
involved.
Cool.
And yeah, we will.
No Wikipedia allowed.
No Wikipedia allowed.
Come on, people. You're there to learn. So, do you have a favorite bear species?
I do.
Oh. Can you reveal it here?
I can. That okay. would be Ursus arctos. That's grizzly bear. It's brown bears here for us in Southeast. And I'm going to get even more specific. I have not just a favorite species, but a very favorite bear.
A very personal connection. Do you have a personal connection with this bear, or do you just seen it enough?
Now, that's a good question, too, whether a bear can make that personal connection. So generally speaking, that is a one-way attachment.
Probably a good thing.
A good thing. But certainly, you know, bears, their sense of smell is so good that I imagine that this particular bear could, after 9 years in a row of smelling me on a daily basis for 5 months out of the year, I imagine the bear could recognize my smell.
Yeah, but you would think.
Yeah.
They're incredibly astute at that, yeah.
I would like to think so.
Yeah, sure. And what is this bear? Do you want to talk about that bear a little bit?
She's got a nickname. She's called Bella, and she lives in British Columbia. So British Columbia is where I started my bear viewing career, and I've since transitioned to Alaska. So this particular bear lives in BC, and she's, you know, she came to that particular estuary. She wasn't fully grown, but she was definitely an adult, and she came with one cub, and she did not keep it. It was lost at some point. And the following year, she made it, and then she came back with two cubs, and it was since the first time she had two cubs in the litter that we watched her become what I would consider the best mother bear example I've seen in my career.
Cool.
Yeah.
How long did those species of bears keep their cubs 2 years around?
Two and a half.
And then has she had multiple litters of how many cubs altogether has she raised?
Altogether, she's probably on – well, she had a litter of three the following time, but she lost one of those. So
that's four.
So that's four at least, and then another two. So let's say six as of now.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah.
And what is it that you've observed so many bears and so many mother bears and all that? What is it in particular about that bear that gives her that determination to you that she's like the best mom?
She's really, really patient. She's really patient with her cubs. She's really patient with people. She's an incredibly good communicator, and I always really enjoyed watching her teach her cubs swimming. So, you know, she chucks them in the river and they just try to crawl out.
Right.
And she chucks them back in and they try to crawl out. And eventually.
Well, this sounds not like a great mother. So far, you're not painting a best picture.
No, she does it very lovingly. But then she gets in the water with them and she plays with them and she lets them crawl on her back and she, you know, hippos them around for a little while. And eventually they just think it's, you know, like kids don't want to go in the bath. And then they get in there and you can't get them out for hours because you give them toys.
Right.
And it was a very similar looking experience when you watch her do that. But she's I saw her do some really incredible things over the years. So there was another mother alpha dominant bear in that particular estuary who was not a great example of a good mother. She would abandon her cubs early or any such situation. And I saw 1 year Bella not adopt these estranged cubs, but what she did do was she let them come within her protected zone. It was mating season at the time. There were a bunch of male bears around, and Bella extended her bubble to include these orphaned cubs, which is incredibly rare. It's been documented before in Yellowstone, and otherwise there are very few examples.
Not a huge evolutionary advantage to her doing that.
No.
I mean, that doesn't make sense if you just go by sort of the Darwin sort of principles of this evolutionary advantage to protecting your own gene pool and all that stuff. So
indeed.
That's a really interesting, really interesting.
Yeah.
So it just shows a high level of nurturing and a high level of intelligence and things like that and just compassion.
Yeah.
Right?
Which
are these things that you don't want to necessarily – you have to be careful about assigning to wild animals. You know, we want to always place human-type emotions on wild animals, but that is it's certainly an interesting observation.
That's hard to do. A lot of the questions that I get asked when we're out there looking at bears is a lot of people say, well, do you think bears feel sorrow and sadness and then you have to get really into the careful word stepping zone. But there was a really wonderful book that was written just a couple of years ago, and I believe it's called Beyond Words. And it basically says that when we try to do research and science on these animals and we take away emotion from the equation, that we're actually doing the science a disservice because we're trying to quantify things that need a dynamic that we then can't account for.
It's an interesting thing, though, because on the flip side, I see that, but I also think the emotion that we end up assigning, especially nature documentaries, things like that, the emotion we end up assigning is a human emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a different – we have a different set of reality than a bear has, right? And so that's – there is obviously these other things that are motivating a bear to an act, like you just said, protecting cubs that aren't even their own.
Mm-hmm.
But – you know, is that, you know, people always want to say love and these mm-hmm. ideas that we have about how we feel.
Yes.
It's, anyway, it's a fascinating topic.
We could
so
go in. Yeah.
You named your favorite individual bear. Now, mm-hmm. what is the maybe what's one of the most you don't have to say the most. What's maybe one of the most unusual bear species that you'll be talking about tonight? That maybe from us, from an Alaskan perspective, would say, oh, well, that is different than the bears I've observed.
That's a toughie. Alaska's got such good bears.
Yeah, we do. We got three of them.
there are definitely a couple members of in the bear world that are just plain odd. Just real have some kind of weird attribute that you wouldn't necessarily think of. Because in Alaska and North America, you know, we have a very kind of a specific
right.
body outline when we think of bear. But some of the bears that you would find in Asia, for example, are very differently shaped. The claws are always quite long and the canines too, but there's one particular bear that has a tongue that could be about 18 inches long.
Now, does that bear use it for like ants or termites
mm-hmm.
or something like that? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's got that sticky tongue mm-hmm. slurping them up kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Raids the termite mounds
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
That's cool. And then I always think too about like are pandas bears?
Ooh.
No.
Ooh,
right?
Ooh.
Or are they?
We're getting right into about slide number
seven. Oh, okay. I mean, I think about that, koalas, all these things that we say are bears and mm-hmm. probably aren't.
Yeah, I was talking this morning with a friend and he asked something similar about strangest bear. And immediately what actually came to mind was a drop bear in Australia. And the first time I learned about them, I was quite excited. I was like, oh, gosh, I've never heard of a drop bear. Tell me about this.
They drop out of a tree. Is that what happens?
This is the one. Yeah. So Australian residents tell visitors, tourists, that be really careful walking under the trees. Never mind all the, you know, spiders and snakes that can get you. It's these drop bears that when you're walking underneath the tree, they'll drop out of the tree right onto your head and tickle you to death or something silly. And it wasn't until we got to that point, I was like, wait a minute, is my leg being pulled here? There's no such thing as drop bears. But I get to every time I have an Australian within my group that I'm going bear viewing with, drop bears definitely
drop
come
bear.
Up. They definitely come up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I fell for it for the first 5 minutes myself.
Drop bears. Well, and then what kind of – give me a little bit of what's your hope out of doing this lecture? What do you hope that people get out of it?
I hope they have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this lecture started – it's been evolving over, gosh, I'd say 10 years. So it started off very, very simple with me standing in the wheelhouse of my boat sort of trying to entertain people on the long boat ride that we had out to get to this estuary. And it started off with black bear claw and a grizzly bear claw. And I had these two things. And so I handed them around the boat and let people test them out and talk about the difference between black bears and grizzly bears. And then I got a canine from each one and then it increased. And over the years, it has morphed into, you know, I can do the presentation in a 10-minute period or I can do it over a 2-hour period, depending on how much, you know, additional information you want to add in, whether you want to dive into biology of bear species or if you want to start getting into the stories that people have told me over the years after they've heard the presentation. So immediately when people find out I'm a bear viewing guide, I get a bear story.
Yeah, right.
And
sure.
Then when I do this presentation, the next thing that happens is I get a bear story afterwards. But sometimes that story gets incorporated into the presentation itself. There will be a little bit of that tonight too. So one really good example that isn't in tonight's presentation was I was doing this 2 years ago. This was a polar bear trip, and a professor of zoology and biology retired from a university in Southern California. He came up to me and he was like, "So guess what? You know, he was one of the first guys to take orphaned black bear cubs and try to rehabilitate them to go back into the wild." And at the time that this was happening at his university, and they had built this enclosure that was totally sealed off so that the bears weren't having human interaction. But the bears were in this enclosure, and it happened to be at the same time that Star Wars, the original trilogy, started being filmed. And as it turns out, these filmmakers came into this enclosure space and they audio recorded the sounds of these orphan cubs.
For I know the character already.
Do you know the character?
Yes.
Who is it?
Chewbacca. Yes.
Yeah. He was the guy that
wow.
Yeah.
He had the bears that is Chewbacca's voice.
Yes, he is. Yeah, that's
the
one.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that's exciting.
Yeah.
That's a good story.
It's cool.
That's a really good story.
It's really cool stuff. So the
bears are so cool.
Bears are totally expansive. They touch everyone,
yeah.
Which is really neat.
Yeah. Well, Teresa Whipple is the person we've been talking to here. Ursa Major Training and Consulting is the name of your firm.
You.
And you're a bear viewing expert and someone that takes people out on guided tours of bears all over the world.
Mm.
Northern, I would say the Northern Hemisphere.
Northern Hemisphere.
Is sort
yeah.
of your,
yeah.
your bag.
I'm definitely Alaska-based from yeah. spring to end of summer.
Right.
Yeah.
Fireside Chat is happening tonight. It's going to be at what time and where?
7 o'clock tonight. Doors open at 6:30, and it's at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center.
All right. Mm-hmm. We'll get there early. These are always sellouts, and go check out all the bears of the world with Teresa Whipple. And Teresa, thanks so much for coming in, telling us about all the bears.
Yeah, thanks
That's
for
awesome.
Having me.
All right.